Welcome to the Popcorn Junkies. Say hello, Mum.
Hiya.
Okay, we're reviewing Oppenheimer. This is the much advertised, much lauded Barbenheim and all the rest of it.
Yes.
It's the story of J. Robert Oppenheimer, is it? Is that his name? J. Robert? Or is it Robert J. Oppenheimer? I can never remember what his full name is. Hang on, let me find it.
I don't know, but the J's
J. Robert Oppenheimer.
Oh,
J. Robert Oppenheimer.
J. Robert
Oppenheimer. It's directed by Christopher Nolan. It stars Cillian Murphy. It also stars Robert Downey Jr., which I didn't realise until seeing the film quite how significant. He's pretty much the second main...
Second half.
Yeah,
yeah.
It also features Matt Damon in a very sort of amplified role. It has a whole host of other sort of luminaries, including Emily Blunt, Florence Pugh, Josh Hartnett, Casey Affleck, Rami Malek.
Oh, Josh Hartnett.
Yeah, I thought Josh Hartnett
was who he was.
This is the story of the atomic physicist, J. Robert Oppenheimer, who he didn't split the atom necessarily, though his team kind of managed to develop the technology that would create the atomic bomb. He was instrumental in the Manhattan Project in creating the bomb or bombs that hit Hiroshima and Nagasaki.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is the story. It's a biopic. And it's a biopic insofar as we go all the way back to him at college and all that kind of stuff. I was surprised...
Mm-hmm.
This is my sort of opening gambit. I was surprised by how much of a political film this was, rather than necessarily... Obviously, it's not sci-fi because it's in the real world, but I thought I was expecting scientific drama much more, which you get plenty of.
You do.
But it was, I'd say, much more a political thriller.
I mean, did you know any of that stuff about him being in the Communist Party and all the stuff about
No. I mean,
I knew vaguely that he was, or he was accused of it at some point. I didn't know whether it was before he made the bomb or after he made the bomb.
So what kind of a Christopher Nolan fan are you?
Oh, give me some of his films.
He did all the Dark Knight films. He did Interstellar. He did Memento. He did Dunkirk. He did Tenet.
Oh, that's right. And that's
did
one
Inception.
I was just going to say, did he do Inception? I think he's brilliant.
Yeah.
He's
why?
Epic because he's not frightened to put epic. There's no such word, but epicity.
Epicity.
On there should be a word on screen. He's not frightened to absolutely go.
I was thinking whilst I was watching this, he's kind of drawn to existential epic.
Yeah.
He's interested in existential thoughts as dramatic vehicles. You know, if you think of Inception, if you think of Interstellar, environmental cataclysm, space. He sort of intercepts time travel. If you think of the reverse time in Memento, and I find him a curious director to know where to position.
He is, but I wouldn't describe him as a mainstream at all.
No, but his films make big money.
Oh yeah, because he throws everything that his considerable skill, doesn't he, and his great casting at the screen. You know how everybody was waiting for Tenet, and then nobody, because of the pandemic, nobody'd seen a film, had they, at the cinema, and then everybody went and everybody couldn't decide whether they were slightly disappointed, except for one or two set pieces.
Yeah.
They couldn't decide whether they were disappointed with the general thing of it.
So this is based on a book called American Prometheus. I love the whole Prometheus thing. I love Prometheus, the films.
Yeah,
I love the quote that goes with Prometheus, which is shown at the beginning of this, which is the quote from, I think it's, is it the Hindu scripture, which says, "Now I am become death, the destroyer of worlds." And you can understand why this is applicable and why it was kind of invoked by Oppenheimer, because, of course, he created the technology, the science, the atom and what have you, in order to be able to do... Well, he was responsible for making the world a very, very dangerous place.
He was. He and his team.
Or was he, Mum? I think what this film does quite interestingly from the get-go... So it tells his life story, it tells the story, and it actually becomes a sort of... I think this is almost the origin story of the Cold War.
Yeah.
This film. It kind of gives us the kind of nuts and bolts of how atomic weaponry developed and was born, and then how that essentially put us... At the start of the Cold War, which is kind of where this film ends, and we are still living in the aftermath of that. We're still in this world now where, nuclear proliferation, you could argue that although it was used once or twice in the war with Japan, it hasn't actually been used again since, even though there's been the threat of it. So could it have been the thing, to quote Kenneth Branagh, that will stop other people from actually blowing each other up?
Yeah. I often wondered why it was used twice, and they explain that in this film,
don't they? So, right, going back to the beginning, what were you expecting from this?
Cillian Murphy, I have to say, in the sense that I find him, even writ large on a huge cinema screen, incredibly watchable.
Yeah.
He's got one of the most expressive faces.
Does he do it all with his eyes, Mum?
Obviously, if it's called Oppenheimer, he would be pretty much leading it.
I was shocked and surprised by how conventional I thought the film started. It started with quite... I felt I was getting... What was the name of the film with Eddie Redmayne, where he played Stephen Hawking. Stephen Hawking, was it? Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Theory of Everything.
Theory of Everything.
I was getting those vibes at the beginning. I was really thrown at the beginning of this because we were getting lots of Cillian Murphy wandering around sort of like all his colleges. It was a rapid montage of him moving through college and essentially getting to, and us moving through his career path from student to much vaunted and respected scientist.
Yeah.
And I was quite shocked by how conventional I found the front of the film. I was really surprised.
I wasn't, because I thought that he'd do something like that to give us the hugeness of what was coming later.
Right.
I mean, why not? Yeah. He didn't big himself up at all. He kept on about the fact that he wasn't that good a mathematician as other people.
Yes.
He wasn't as good at this, he wasn't as good at that. And he lent on other people, and that riff was taken all the way through the film, wasn't
yes,
it?
Yes, yeah.
They were hugely important, all the other people in his team.
But what you have at the beginning, in the first sort of almost 15 to 20 minutes, you have this sort of abstract technique of fission and fusion and sort of, you know,
which is shown on screen.
Molecules and atoms flying around, which I thought was all right. I thought it was quite nice. It worked really well in the trailer. And, you know, this was clearly, and we had lots of shots of Cillian Murphy looking quite moodily, I thought, out at the stars, and, you know, and then you cut to kind of, you know, molecules and neutrons sort of flying around and doing all their business.
And also modernism, they put Picasso in there, did you notice?
Well, I mean, it was all the beginning of this film, I think it was quite ambitious what he was trying to
do.
And I think, especially for what is essentially a mainstream film.
Yeah.
He was drawing the connection, which I think needs to be drawn between modernism in all art, because
yeah,
you had
exactly.
the wasteland in there, you had music,
you did,
I think you had Benjamin Britten, he had, as you rightly say, Picasso and all that kind of stuff.
He stayed a long time at the Picasso.
He did stay
Two
a long time. Yeah. And so this idea of fracturing and splitting and breaking up and fragmentation, which is a key part of modernist art and modernist expression.
I suppose some people could criticise that and say it was almost too much, but I thought it was
really... Well, no, quite the opposite. I think he should have done more with it. I think within it, he had something really quite sort of compelling and interesting. And so I thought it did a really good job of parking where he was at. In this idea of science and science breaking the rules and breaking new boundaries, you know, science sat alongside the arts. This was a moment in history.
Mm.
And so it really gave us that sense that we were in a moment in history. Now, of course, this is all part during World War II, the beginning of World War II. And I thought what was really neat about the history of this was the idea that, you know, I came to it thinking Oppenheimer's an evil bastard who created the most awful piece of kit that now means we can all kill each other. But of course, what this film goes to great lengths to show is America wasn't the only one chasing this technology.
No.
You know, Germany was heading there.
Yeah.
Russia already gets there.
Yeah.
You know, so it's curious that I think this film did quite a good job of showing us that if it hadn't been Oppenheimer and his gang, someone else would have done it.
For sure.
And someone else could have done it and used it in a much more malicious way than you could argue the Americans did in Japan. So I liked all of that.
I liked
the idea that actually, and I felt it could have gone into that a bit more, because the other thing right at the beginning, and this is what I want to get a sense of from you.
Yeah.
We were quite quickly introduced to this narrative of Robert Downey Jr. being this sort of politician. He's wanting to get into government. He wants a cabinet place. And in order to get this cabinet place, he needs to get the vote of the House in order to be kind of elected. But he's been part of this atomic kind of community. He's worked with Oppenheimer. And essentially, he's wanting to kind of, we discover he's wanted to throw Oppenheimer to the wolves, you know.
Yeah, well, we don't discover that for a long time.
No, we don't.
And I must admit at the beginning, I didn't know, the film's almost a film in two halves in that respect. But I didn't know what to make of Robert Downey Jr.
I think you've used this comment a lot. And as I was watching it, I was thinking, I wonder if my mum's feeling what I'm feeling. I felt for the first 45 minutes, the rhythm of this film was diabolically bad.
Did you?
Diabolically bad.
Yeah.
It didn't know how to pace itself. It didn't know where to stay. So we had a rapidly developing conventional biopic of his youth moving through college. We then cut off to Robert Downey Jr. seeking to get a job where he's then telling someone else a backstory, which we're then cutting back to another point in time, which isn't the point in time of him coming through.
Yeah. Did you find that complicated?
Well, it was complicated. I could work it out, but it was incredible. I couldn't get into any rhythm. I felt every time I was settling into... not even a scene. Every time I was settling into a time frame, it pulled us out and it tugged us away. And, you know, and it was using this... What did you think of the device of using... Right at the beginning, the first time we see Robert Downey Jr., it's always in black and white. What did you think of the whole black and white versus colour thing?
I don't know, except I know that we were supposed to take it seriously. I mean... It was politics, I suppose, as opposed to...
Well, no, I mean, what they've said in interviews is this is a different perspective. It's meant to be more documentary.
Yeah, and which it was. It was.
But it felt superfluous. I felt it was there for the sake... It didn't add anything to it for me, because then he even then also used a different colour palette for the same time jump to Robert Downey Jr. which would be a sort of slightly sepia toned kind of colour, and that was even more confusing. So I think he had a lot more on the cutting room floor.
I think that, Mark.
I think he struggled with what he ended up putting in the film.
Yeah.
To massage it in and make it sort of streamlined. I'm going to be really honest. I found the first, it was 3 hours long. I found the first hour utterly insufferable. I thought this is bad.
Whoa.
I thought this is bad.
Well, all right
bad,
then.
Bad.
I know what you're saying, and in some respects I wouldn't disagree with you, but where I would, and I go right back to my very first comment that I made you when you said what took you to see this film, is what makes it not bad is Cillian Murphy, because he literally takes us, and he's in every shot.
Well, it's a big close-up. I mean, I have to say, the cinematography is lovely, and it uses IMAX in close-up. I love that. I mean, his face
I thought
is
it was the fact that he was sort of leading us through all these branches of historical fact, political fact. I mean, we've already mentioned it, but I like the fact that we were shown a sort of art modernism as well as, I mean, they were placing
it. It was very brief.
It in their thing. And I think I didn't find it insufferable. I found it quite interesting in the way
conventional. I felt like I was watching something I'd seen a million times before.
Okay.
I was waiting for Eddie Redmayne on a bicycle or Benedict Cumberbatch from that other one, The Invention of Solitude. What was that one that he was the machine guy at?
Yeah.
Now, the other thing that made it really insufferable, oh my God, he cannot write for women. He cannot direct.
That's a whole different story.
He cannot tell romantic stories. Now, Florence Pugh,
it was
shockingly bad.
I thought, I wanted to immediately talk to Florence Pugh's agents and said,
I wanted to talk to Florence Pugh and say, why have you got your kit off?
What the hell?
You know, I think that, you know, more often than not, I find it really patronising to the performer. She would have made a decision on why that was right for her. But her nudity scenes and her sort of having sex with Robert Oppenheimer, and you know, the connection with the Communist Party and all this kind of stuff, I thought it could have been, that whole sort of milieu and that whole realm, I felt, could have been drawn in a much more nuanced, complex, clever, witty. I think it really suffered with bad script.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with that. And considering it was almost like they'd got somebody, that infuriated me, they'd got somebody of the calibre of Florence Pugh thrown away in a scene where she's sitting without a top on. And you're thinking, what on earth
but,
is
but
he?
But mum, she's gyrating on him, and then she leaps up and goes to the shelf and says, oh, look at your books.
No,
I mean, it was so awful.
I mean, I thought, what's the name of his wife?
Emily Blunt.
I thought Emily Blunt's was pretty bad, but Florence Pugh is just thrown to the walls.
Yeah, now, so this is not a criticism, a stress of Emily Blunt and Florence Pugh.
You're right.
The way those characters were drawn and their relationship with Cillian Murphy or Oppenheimer were both diabolical.
They were, both of them.
What? Emily Blunt?
Yeah.
What the fuck happened there?
It was awful. I mean, Emily Blunt got more, and somebody said this.
She got better.
She got better, and also somebody said, because she'd done a film, she did a film with him, didn't she? The last
Quiet.
They said because they knew each other better. It works better.
Well, Cillian Murphy's been in all his films. Kenneth Branagh's been in all. I mean, he often works with the same crew, cast,
I thought his work. Well, it wasn't work with his female actresses. It was beyond awful.
And another, and the reason I'm homing in on this is the first hour of the film. So,
I mean, why leave it out completely?
I'm so pleased you said that, because we're already long. B, it didn't really add anything to the story. He's actually quite an unlikable guy. He's not necessarily unlikable, but he's a very, he's just not a warm character.
No, which he showed well enough.
I mean, I always like that. I'm a big fan of characters in films that aren't warm or aren't particularly likable. I like that. I find that a challenge.
Yeah.
And I don't necessarily want to like him. I want to admire him. I want to see him go through what he's going through. I want to see him struggle. I don't need to like him. I just want to know. Neither his relationship with Florence Pugh, but the relationship with Florence Pugh was about sort of hammering home. All that happens at the beginning of this film is we see his connections with left-wing politics and communism, which becomes a major issue, because really the Oppenheimer story is if you know the McCarthy trials, it's like that. America, essentially after the war, tries to cast him as a traitor, a communist sympathiser traitor. That's how they try to portray him. And this film, huge, huge parts of this film were actually the informal kind of, committee. Or jury, or investigation, or trial, a sort of informal trial of Oppenheimer. So if you're a Nolan fan and you're going to this film, which I was, thinking this is going to be IMAX cinematic, in-your-face, explosions, bombs, atomic, weaponry. Even, I get it, you can't create explosions where there weren't any if it's history.
Yeah.
But lots of that sort of stuff, which the trailers sell you.
Yes.
I wasn't expecting to sit in a cupboard for approximately 40 minutes of the film. Now, that's not to say that those scenes weren't great, but they weren't brilliant.
No, they weren't brilliant, that's true. Although the all those actors are good.
They were all good, especially...
especially the one who led him.
Yeah, you what's like his name? Really I like really him, like him, yeah.
I don't know him as well as you, but he was really good, I thought.
Let's get to where this film does work. What started to creep through for me, and I don't know if you agree, about 40, 50 minutes, but it wasn't loud enough as a sort of, almost like the thread of dynamite started to kind of a little fuse lit, was at the point that you realised, okay, he's going to be asked to go and set up a town in New Mexico.
I had no idea about
that. No, and I thought that was really interesting. And Matt Damon was going to be his chief of command. Now, before we get to Matt Damon, we have one moment with Einstein.
Oh, yes.
Now... I'm sorry.
You're destroying my illusions.
No. I'm sorry. Well, these are the problems. That this is Tom Conti can't do any other accent well.
He can't do Einstein.
He can't do Einstein.
He can't act very well.
He can't act.
Why did they choose him?
And his hat, which blew off his head. I could see the string.
No,
I couldn't literally, but you could feel it. It was like tug now, barrel.
No, that was
no.
Ridiculous.
I mean, it was. Anyway, so Tom Conti, all I was thinking of was him in...
Why? He's never in anything.
He was in, what was it, Bridget Jones, what was the one, Shirley Valentine. All I could see was the Greek show me your stretch marks. Yeah. I thought, and there's something about, because Einstein's face has become so ubiquitous and almost comic, when you see him, it's a bit like seeing Groucho Marx.
Yeah.
So I thought, that would, I don't know, even though it's what happened, all of these things were making me, were really holding me at arm's length. And then the fuse lit, and this is the moment where this film took off for me, with Matt Damon.
Oh.
It was the moment Matt Damon came into the equation and we got into what I think Christopher Nolan's most comfortable with, which is process, technical process, and humans moving through that and the natural existential drama that was developing from this.
That's true, but in one sense, I thought you were going to get to Matt Damon and say, and as for Matt Damon, he overacted dreadfully.
I didn't think that at all.
No, but he did a bit.
I didn't think, whenever Matt Damon walks on screen, I thought Casey Affleck was fucking brilliant.
Oh, no, that was a case in point where I thought, whoever's cast this film, not the women who were...
Well, no, the women were great. Their scenes were awful.
But the thing is, I don't think you should be allowed women in this film.
It's a bit like they often say about Spielberg. Spielberg has said, I will never do a sex scene because I can't do them.
No, Atlanta Scorsese, I think. Scorsese is not good at women, with men.
So Matt Damon kicked in.
He was good.
I thought he was excellent.
Yeah, he was.
I just thought he gave it what it needed. He gave, because of his character and historically what he did, he gave everyone, everyone knew where they were at. He came into the lecture hall. The exchanges between him and Cillian Murphy were really enjoyable.
Yeah, they were.
Military versus science.
Yeah, and they clearly liked each other.
Yeah, and that's what I liked. There was a sort of mutual respect and there was a kind of, you know, sparring. And I thought he was very good at that. I thought the building, I thought we could have done with, ironically, I was expecting we were going to get a little bit more exploration of the existential consequences of quantum mechanics and what have you. I was surprised that he didn't go there because there was a really captivating moment where one of the risks or the worries that they've got around this scientific development, which I thought was a fascinating idea, was the fear when Cillian and co realised that, you know, the Germans are racing to do this, the Russians are racing, then they're racing to do it. There's this idea that if you manage to split whatever atom it is they're splitting and you get this ignition, the danger is that there will be a chain reaction in every single atom.
Yeah.
So that the globe will go. And I never knew there was that fear.
No, I didn't.
And I thought, wow.
Yeah.
That should have been the point at which all the abstract fucking shots should have come in, not right at the beginning. I didn't find this film took us deeper into the dark, dark Promethean depths of conflict. As soon as we got through to the point that they've developed the technology and they're making the technology and they're testing the bombs, this film immediately went into the politics. I didn't feel we were going for the emotion. I thought we were going to get a deeply psychological, difficult, internal strike. I mean, that's not to say he wasn't playing that.
He was playing that,
but the film wasn't asking it of him. So he kept then walking from one moment where you think there's a lot going on in him.
Yeah.
To then another fucking committee room.
Well, that's what I would say about this film is that he is a god. They show that he's a god in one sense. The fact that the camera is on his face the whole time. You see every emotion. Mm. The fact that as the film goes on, he gets thinner and thinner and thinner and thinner until you could see through him, but because of the travails of being God, which let's face it, I thought Christopher Nolan was saying all that in the personality of Cillian Murphy, who I thought played it brilliantly.
I think Christopher Nolan knew he had a face and an actor.
It certainly
that
his face.
Every time he cut to him, you cannot help but imbue that remarkable face with everything you want to imbue him
with. Yeah.
I actually think Christopher Nolan totally dropped the ball, because he could, I don't think he helped Cillian Murphy out at all. Cillian Murphy did all the heavy lifting in this film. And that's a weird thing to say, because it's about Cillian Murphy, so you would expect him to. But what I'm saying is that every time we were, so a small example was when there was a really powerful moment where he was, there were so many sort of lecture hall moments where he's announcing something and they're all bouncing their feet, and then it starts to bleach out and burn out, and we see one woman's skin start to flay as some kind of, you know,
that's not until much further.
No, that's much further in. No, but I mean, it's only much further in that you're beginning to get a sense of the turmoil, because what I thought was interesting is he was up, there was no conflict at the beginning. There was no conflict because if they didn't do it, the Germans were going to do it. So everyone was just like doing it. The conflict did come later on, and that's why I'm timing in on this point.
Yeah.
And I thought, oh, here we go. We're going to get into, he's realising the consequences, and it's going to go really fucking, it did not go anywhere near as deep as I thought it was going to go. It too quickly, after scenes of great existential significance, we were back in the broom cupboard. You know, he's good at spectacle.
He is, but
we had some spectacle.
Okay.
What did you feel of the whole sort of setting up the town and the building the bomb and the making of the bomb?
I liked all of that. I thought all of that worked. As you're talking, it sort of makes me see the film differently, in the sense that I think he was trying to do two things, completely different things. One is tell a story like this politically and keep us engaged in that. And the other one is show us the most incredible science fiction, if you like,
moment. I would argue he doesn't show us that either.
He does in the end.
He doesn't.
But he
shows us an explosion. There is archive footage. This film felt strangely claustrophobic and unadventurous in its ability to show the magnitude and the monstrosity. I was fully expecting, and it's totally right to do it, footage of the devastation, a moment of... This film really drops the ball when it doesn't even explore the significance of what the bomb ends up doing.
I disagree with that completely because it did for me in that moment where they're actually doing it and because it takes him ages, him himself, Oppenheimer, to realise what he's done to a full extent, doesn't it?
Yes.
Yeah. And then when he does, and they're all sort of pressing levers and buttons which are going to mean the end of the world, or certainly the end of cities, and we're given these flashes, and that was so powerful. I mean, I instantly cried, in the sense of deep crying. This is what it meant. This is what they were doing. He's only just realized that. Some things didn't work in that, like the fact of go and put the washing in. I mean, that was ridiculous. Almost everything to do with women and his relationships with women didn't work, but forget, and all his things to do with his relationships with men did, interestingly enough. Although a lot of the performances,
I mean, a lot of people criticised. I thought, right, I quite like Robert Downey Jr.'s performance, but I mean, a number of people have said they didn't like him.
No, I thought he overdid it.
Yeah,
I did. So he did all of this with his hands in the end, which made me think, you know, the way Fagin's always portrayed in Oliver Twist, it's sort of like, I thought, will you stop that?
I tell you what I thought was really good, some shout-outs here. Alden Ehrenreich, who was his assistant, who played Han Solo in Solo, I thought he was excellent. His little aide, the guy who was running around with him, telling him how it's not going and it is winning. I thought he was particularly good. There's a moment where it's essentially Casey Affleck, who's kind of portrayed and built up as this really ruthless member of the American Army, is interviewing Oppenheimer or chatting with Oppenheimer. And we're unaware that they may be, I don't want to do a spoiler, this is a spoiler review.
Yeah.
You know, they're recording something. And I thought Casey Affleck, he has like, what, 2 or 3 minutes in the film. Absolutely sensational.
That is so powerful.
Such a powerful scene.
But then again, didn't you think that partly that's to do with choice casting? Because
before
he'd said a word, when the camera went on to him, I thought, I was suddenly petrified that whatever he's going to do to Oppenheimer, it is going to be dreadful.
The script was really good when it didn't involve emotional relationships.
Yeah.
The script can't do that much in terms of written dialogue in order to amplify deep emotional reservoirs of conflict. You can't help but imbue, this is what I'm trying to say, can't help but imbue Cillian Murphy's astonishing face with all the heavy consequences of everything that's been plopped around him in terms of this film. But what I genuinely feel that Chris Nolan didn't do much more to make it more emotionally complex or challenging. Cillian Murphy wasn't helped by script.
No, in actual fact,
he wasn't helped
so
by his interrelationship with any other character other than Matt Damon. I thought, interestingly.
Yeah, no, I wouldn't disagree with that.
Yeah, and I found the science versus military antagonism.
Yeah.
And then the moments where they found shared kind of destinations.
And Matt Damon's
really
pragmatism, as opposed to all this esoteric, you know.
Absolutely.
Whatever. No, I would agree with that entirely.
I think their relationship brought a much needed. And in a weird way, although Robert Downey Jr. perhaps did over-egg it, there was that nice other ancillary aspect to it. But again, I thought that was another narrative line that I didn't need. I could have just done with a film that just focused on him developing the bomb, the technology, the constant self-conflict, the potential implications, the little flicks out to the historic pragmatism that was at work. I found fascinating.
Yeah.
You know, so this idea that, it was a real shock to me at the moment where he walks into that room where someone's teaching someone or lecturing someone. Hitler's dead.
Yeah.
And they haven't made the bomb or dropped the bomb.
No.
And I'm thinking, God, I didn't realise it was that late in the war that they did this to Japan.
Exactly. I love those sort of, they weren't deviations from history. They were actual history, but he did those really well.
I thought, that's what I mean. I think where he was strongest with his script was I think he should have stayed focused on one narrative timeline. I really do.
Yeah.
I think this film got overly complicated.
I think as well that maybe, sorry to interrupt, but no. I think he sort of, in a way, I get what you're saying. He felt, I saw it as a positive and you saw, in a way, saw it as a negative. He fell foul of the fact that in Cillian Murphy's face, we've got, it's Milton, isn't it? It's like a fallen angel.
Yeah.
And so all the Prometheus stuff and the thing of, we've got it on screen without him doing anything.
That's my point. I can look at the poster and give it all of that stuff.
Yeah.
I was imaginatively putting into Cillian Murphy's head all of the complications and contradictions and horror that I would be feeling in his position. And I was asking myself at one point, I thought, Christopher, what are you doing to make me feel?
No,
what's going on? What are you bringing to the table here? Because
maybe the fact that he kept it was clearly obvious that he kept losing weight all the way through, and that was, I suppose, maybe Cillian Murphy took it into his own hands to show his sort of, how bad he felt
his
about
trauma
it.
Was his a literal manifestation of weight.
Because
yeah,
he became smaller and smaller and thinner and thinner, and
I think it sounds obvious, but all the kind of pomp and ceremony around this film, and Cillian Murphy really, really rescues it. I have to say, I thought the first hour was really, there were many, many, and not just the first hour, there were many moments, proclamatory moments, lots of monologues that were simply there to remind us and orientate us functionally as to where we were going and what was happening. And I found that really quite tedious at times. I just thought, oh man.
And what did you think, looking at it more deeply, the whole idea of the town? Because it seemed to me that, when they were sort of quizzing him and when they were sort of, he was on trial, effectively, he certainly was on, it seemed like he was on trial to me, they were more or less saying that if he hadn't done it himself, people had come in and spied on the mission and informed the Russians. They say that, don't they, in fact?
Well, we did discover that, that was going on. It was espionage.
I mean, what did you think of the whole idea of that? I had no idea that they built a town in
the
middle of nowhere.
Well, I kind of got a sense of it from the trailer, so it wasn't a surprise. But, I keep sounding like a broken record. I think the better film, not that I'm sitting here telling Chris Nolan at all how to make a better film, I think the better film, that town thing, which in and of itself is an incredible commitment and fact. And they pay reference to it at one point where he says, if you don't build a church, we won't get people to bring their families if you don't build a school. And I thought there were those little moments where I thought there is such a rich, complex tapestry of stuff going on here.
He tried to do too much.
I think he might have done it all, but had to even get it down from a 6-hour cut down to a 3-hour cut. And I think in that 6-hour cut will be all the stuff. I think there was another moment with Florence Pugh, which I thought was beyond excruciating.
Everything to do with her was it?
The scene where Emily Blunt sees her writhing in the room on his lap.
What on earth? I know.
Did you see that? She's looking at her. She's saying, then someone cut to a shot of her nakedly.
Well, presumably that was some sort of surreal.
Well, of course it was. But I mean, we haven't had any moment like that elsewhere.
No.
Rhythm and consistency is important. And so having this one moment of, let's call it magic realism, where Florence Pugh's writhing on him in the middle of this broom cupboard fucking, you know, jury situation.
That ended up on the cutting room floor.
It was a terrible moment. I don't even think Florence Pugh looked convinced by it.
Florence Pugh looked like she was having a terrible time.
And Emily Blunt looked rough. I mean, I know she was meant to because she was a drinker, but it didn't look like Emily Blunt.
No, it didn't. We can put the women over here. The women were truly dreadful. And I'd be furious if I was either one of them. What did you think about the stuff? I mean,
I didn't feel I got enough detailed science. I could have coped with it. I'm not a fan of physics. Who was it who said they're not? I'm not a fan of physics, but I could have done with a bit more.
Yeah, that's interesting, because I was just going to say, what did you think about the stuff which I find absolutely fascinating, like one star bursts into another star, or it just makes everything disappear because it collapses? I mean, that is astonishingly
Am I on my own in this? I didn't find that revelatory at all, because I know it.
Well, that stuff is kind of I've only got
standard fucking physics.
No, I know, but I
thought it was much richer when he was talking about, you know, one atom going off will ignite all. I was like, oh my God, of course there would have been. Why haven't we ever thought about the potential ramifications of one igniting all the other? That I'd never thought about.
And
I think it also kind of dropped the ball around the whole debate around, which we're living in now, which is this idea of, you know, with a nuclear weapon, is it actually the best deterrent? Does it end up becoming the best deterrent? You know, was it best that the Americans got there first, used it first, rather than the Germans did? Or that, you know, and I also loved a lovely historical detail, which I think is wonderful, is the suggestion that Hitler almost dropped the ball and didn't get there as quickly as he could because his expert scientist was Jewish.
Yeah,
I like that.
I wonder if that's true.
I love the idea that his own fucking anti-Semitism tripped him up in the end.
Didn't
it would have been actually his weakness. That would have been the thing that stopped
Germany.
I love
the references to Heisenberg, which is, goes back to
of course it does. Breaking Bad.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, I don't know. Cameo that I was quite shocked by, Gary Oldman playing President Truman.
Was that Gary Oldman?
That was Gary Oldman.
As I watched it, I thought, I know this is a good actor. And wasn't he horrible?
Horrible.
I thought you deserve everything you get, the American.
Little moments, like when the door shut on Oppenheimer and he said, get that sort of snivelling, sort of wuss, sissy out of the way. I thought, how do they know he said that?
I don't remember.
How do they know? Well, they said, get that crybaby out of here or something as the door shut. And I thought, I don't know, there were things in it that were really, really
poor.
Rubbish.
Yeah, they were. And some of those were
surprised.
Some performances were amazing, and I kept thinking whoever did casting in this was absolutely spot on. Mm. Forget the women in this. But some of it was dreadful. Like, there was a particularly important man. He was in it all the way through it with his collar turned up and a big beefy face and a dreadful accent. You seem to be the person who was let everything down in the end. I mean, I can't even remember what his name was. He had a lot of screen time. I don't know the face. I don't know what he was saying.
I think you might be talking about Ben Safdie.
Yeah.
Benny Safdie.
I think that might be him. That might be. I'll tell you who's in it. The man who played Dot Man.
David Dasmalchian.
Yeah, he keeps cropping up now, doesn't he?
I don't know.
It must have been on the cutting room floor, because sometimes when Nolan wanted to present a historical figure and send us back in our seats, like, I give you the Casey Affleck moment, which was astonishingly good, and I can't even think what they said to each other.
What was clever about that was it was script, and this is what I mean. I think he's very good at kind of, you know, process and history, you know, the set piece. They'd set him up as the most brutal bastard who, he interrogated someone to such a point that there was no one came out of the interrogation. He's a fucking lunatic. So he was soaked in kind of malevolence.
Yeah.
So when you saw this relatively friendly, nice looking American face,
he became petrified.
You're like, fucking hell, you're petrifying.
Yeah.
Okay, what am I trying to say? I think we have come to think that we're going to see a Christopher Nolan film. We're going to get big Hans Zimmer-y kind of booms, big things, big moments, big events. And nothing could potentially be much bigger than an atomic bomb going off or being tested. And I was really shocked and surprised by how much of this film, I think, got caught in a quagmire of political incidental political stuff that, yes, is of interest. There was some that was interesting around global historical moment.
Yeah.
And then there was other stuff
which they made
for
a big deal of, like the John F. Kennedy moment. Where
But the whole kind of McCarthyite type thing, yes, it's interesting. But I could have
Seen it so often.
And I could have coped with all of that McCarthyite. He was not trusted. He was then nearly tried and he was nearly cast as this traitor. I could have done with that with a little title at the end, just saying, Jay, you know, Oppenheimer. I'd have been like, you're fucking joking. After all that, he was done that. That's as much as it needed. It didn't need another hour.
No, and also, I mean, to go back to Cillian Murphy, when during that trial they put him at the back on the side and you don't get to see him, and as his face, for me, was the thing that was powering the whole film, we got lost then in a sort of political wrangle, didn't we, of what the men were saying.
I mean, I think what will happen in terms of the receipt of this film is I think a lot of film critics... You can't not say it's good because it's Christopher Nolan, it's Oppenheimer, it's Cillian Murphy. You know, Cillian Murphy's great, and Cillian Murphy is fantastic. There's no
getting
away from
it. I think he deserves something.
I think if he doesn't get nominated for an Oscar, it's ridiculous. I mean, he gives it, he goes for it, for it. I think he could have been much more supported with a slightly more nuanced kind of script and better drawn relationships between all the other characters other than Matt Damon. I mean, I sort of believed in that a lot. Kenneth Branagh always dropped in as the kind of,
he wasn't.
Well, the problem I have with things like little cameos from people like Kenneth Branagh is you're spending a lot of time going, oh, that's Kenneth Branagh, which punctures the kind of immersion for me, because you're getting in. And that's where casting can actually be a problem, where you spend your time going, who's, oh, it's him. And
I agree that
you haven't really thought about what you're saying.
Yeah.
So, you know, little moments, which just to me felt a bit cringe, like the injecting the apple with poison and then him standing there looking at it to get it. It wasn't that it wasn't a good idea or that it might have happened. It was just like, it was done in such a sort of...
strange way.
Obvious way.
It was done in a sort of...
Toy Town way.
Yeah, Toy Town.
It was like filmed by painting by numbers. I was surprised. So if you're going to see a kind of whack you in the face film, it really wasn't that for me. I was sure. Anyway, why don't you give us your final thoughts and a score?
Okay, well, I suppose this shows the difference between you and I. I wanted a film that told me a lot about the science. And I felt I was given that, and obviously you felt, well, I suppose the whole idea...
What were you told?
Well, I just adore the idea of stars collapsing into whatever and taking whatever with them.
No, don't get me wrong. I mean, it's fantastic, but and I know that will have been what he was thinking about at that time, because we didn't know it all then, but
it feels so sort of... Yeah, and I like the abstraction of the images during those things. Mm. I thought Cillian Murphy led us through the film, and without him it would have been boring. Yeah, it would have been great big chunks of it.
I think a lot of people will find it slow and boring then.
I did think that myself. I didn't. Mm. I wanted to go from one set piece with men all discussing...
I think a lot of people,
politics.
For example, my test on that would be science. Someone like Maddie, you know, someone in their early 20s.
Yeah.
Is like, oh, I'm going to go and see the Chris Nolan. I really kind of hesitated because they want to do the double bill. And I was thinking, you're going to find all of the kind of American politic kind of committee room stuff really dull.
Yeah.
Really dull.
Yeah.
Dull.
Yeah.
Because it wasn't even done in a way that was kind of electric.
No, it wasn't. Well, I was going to go much higher than this, but I would say 90.
Much higher than 90.
I was going to give it something like 98.
Were you?
I was. Because I was so... What got me was Cillian Murphy's face, but also those odd, very odd moments where you, in the background, you had people screaming and dissolving in front of you, which I thought the way that was done, if it had been done any more obviously, it would have been cringe, but the way that he did it reminded me of Nope, in the sense that it scared me to death, but we weren't given anything really. I thought, oh no, sorry, I always do my summing up almost afterwards. I thought Matt Damon was brilliant. He sort of came in gung-ho. But I agree that his relationship with Cillian Murphy, if it wasn't for him,
I never tired of their exchanges.
No, I didn't.
Whereas I couldn't care less about his exchanges with half his scientists.
Well, no, that's true. And some of them were risible, like Albert Einstein.
Guys, I mean, please share with me. You know, this isn't, you know, I went into this, I was so excited about this film. I mean, I really was. And I do sometimes worry that can be part of the problem sometimes. This is, I'd say, of all the Christopher Nolan films I've seen, I enjoyed this the least.
Oh, wow.
It was held together by Cillian. It was held together by him in a big close-up. So that's a good choice and decision by the director, because you're going for your strength.
Yeah.
I think what maybe happened here was, although you're talking about a bomb, and I do think this film is falling, will fall for some people, will be a victim of what it promised in the trailers. And what there wasn't even the sound of a Geiger counter in the film. And this sounds ridiculous, but from Boise perspective, those trailers were all about ticking, talking, Geiger counter. Don't get me wrong, that moment in this film is excellent and it's fantastic. And the moment of the explosion and then the kind of the delay before the aftermath of the explosion hitting, oh, that's great. But in a weird way, I think what they might have discovered was, yes, there's a Big Bang. This is about a Big Bang moment. But the Big Bang wasn't Big Bang enough.
No.
Not in today's world of what we're used to. And that's where I think, as I was saying right at the beginning, he could have possibly done well to have maybe even...
gone longer.
No, okay. Use CGI to make the fucking mushroom cloud a mushroom cloud. Just give us something that makes us all go... Because I didn't even get that moment where I was expecting to be really emotionally moved. At the point of, I was going to get an electric moment of, oh my God, yes, this is a seismic, literally, moment of, I didn't at all.
Oh, I did. But only with those tiny, tiny little drops of...
There was a huge emotional contingent of this film was absent. It was really weird. There was something about it that wasn't there for me. And maybe it's partly because he was a scientist and an unlikable kind of character and not warm and perhaps he wasn't a very emotional person. But the whole film had a strangely sort of...
Hands off.
A sort of unemotional aspect to it. Right down to, you know, like Emily Blunt, unlikable. Florence Pugh. I didn't feel or yearn for anyone. The only character I felt something for was the pragmatism, the self-aware, self-smiling pragmatism of Matt Damon.
Well, now you say that, and I sort of look at it as a whole, I can see that, I mean, that was by far the richest, if the only relationship, really, that he had.
I think the best part of the whole film is the middle hour.
Yeah, no, I would say that for me too, but...
So if I was to score this, wow, I'd give this 65.
Whoa.
I'm going to be honest, I was disappointed.
Oh, okay. I was excited. I loved it.
No, well, that's good. We like contrasting opinions.